Yeah, that's what drew me in because AJ sent me the link to the trailer and then we watched the first episode and I just loved it because, you know, I'm really big into sci-fi and fantasy, but at the same time, like, why can't there be stories, you know, with characters who look like me? And that's why I gravitated towards this so much because I see a lot of my 16-year-old self in Keloid and like I recognize that character and I recognize his mother, and so yeah, I love it. And although there's an overarching, like, you know, fantasy theme, like it's really about those relationships, you know, between, you know, mother and son, you know, it's really about that. So that's why I love it so much.
Podcast. I've been here for years.
TheKidsWearCrowns.com.
I'm an alien from outer space.
Outer space.
I'm a cyber girl without a face, a heart or a mind.
I'm a product of the middle. I'm a product of the middle. I'm a product of the main.
Welcome everybody to Don't Call It a Podcast. I forget what episode we're on. It's like 27, I think.
Yeah, we're in the 20s now.
Yeah, it's been a lot of these. I haven't been on the past few. But today we have a very special guest. We're not doing our typical podcast where we just sit around and discuss something. We have a very, very special guest, creator of the web series Keloid, part of the Black Film and TV Collective, Miss Huria. I said that right.
Almost. The Black TV, so you crisscross film and TV, but people do that all the time. So it's the Black the Black TV and Film Collective, and film it's Huria. You got all the words, so that's the most important thing.
Right, I just didn't put them in the right order. It's like, please excuse my Darren's album. You know, I messed that up before I multiply. But go ahead.
Thanks for joining us.
Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I am a writer, director, and a producer, but I also am the executive director of the Black TV and Film Collective. As you mentioned, we are a 501c3 organization here in New York City. We have 1,200 members. We are writers, directors, cinematographers, editors, producers, costume designers, the whole nine, just a whole mass of television and film professionals who decided to come together and help each other grow artistically and professionally. And we've been doing that now for a couple of years, and it's really great. And this year, we're beginning to release collective content as a collective, which is also pretty cool. And so for me, the Black TV and Film Collective, we just call it the collective. It sits at like the intersection of two things that I'm really passionate about, which is helping other people to make their stories, but also telling my own. So I'm really excited to be here tonight with you guys. But even more than that, I'm just really excited about life right now, about where the direction my career is going. You know, just in general, I'm just really, really happy.
Yeah, that is awesome. Also, Ronnie's here, but he's not important.
Yeah, I'm not important. I'm in the back seat on this one. You know, I'm just glad to be here. Glad to have our guests. I'm just chilling.
I don't know how I came across this. It was on my timeline, and you know, anything that says anything about like Blurred, I immediately like zone into it. And I happened to see the trailer for this series called Keloid. Initially, I was like, Keloid, what is that?
The name stands out. I'll tell you that.
The name stood out. I was like, okay, I'm wondering what this is about. And the concept immediately drew me in. So Keloid is about a young Black teenager living in New York who has superpowers. And it's kind of a short series about him developing his powers. So, you know, this is something I feel like I would have dreamed up in English class in like seventh grade. And to see it brought to life is kind of really dope. So how did you come up with this concept?
You know, we started to talk as a collective about starting a channel, you know, a channel that could showcase our work. And so when we thought about what kind of content we wanted on the channel, we were like, okay, we got to have, you know, some Black love. We got to have some comedy, because who doesn't like to laugh? And maybe we'll do some reality, maybe some sketch stuff. But we kept coming back to this idea of sci-fi and supernatural, because so many of us are kind of like geeks. And there was nothing that came through the collective that really, the scripts that were ready. So I just sat down and wrote it. Like one night I was like, forget it, I'm just gonna write something. And I just sat there and I started with just a little small nugget of an idea. Started with this idea about my little brother. And like my little brother, let me tell you, like when he was 15, 16, 17, you couldn't tell him anything. And I don't know if this is boys in general or boys and girls, but this kid, you couldn't, if you told him the sky was blue, he will argue you down about how your retina really is really a different color and because of the reflection of the light, et cetera, et cetera.
That totally sounds like me.
Yeah, no, I'm all about doing stuff like that.
And so him and my mother, they just butted heads constantly, because my mother was like a worrywart. She's a Leo, and so she's very protective of her cubs. And my little brother wasn't trying to hear none of that. He was trying to go out, experience life, you know, adventure, all that kind of stuff. And so that's what I started with. I started this with this idea of this mother who's very, very protective of her son. And what if this family had special abilities? What would that look like? And boom, that's just kind of how it took off.
Yeah, this definitely sounds... Oh, go ahead, Ron.
Oh, yeah, I was about to say, to branch off from that, I've noticed that you're the writer, creator, director. So I wanted to know if you came from this from the writer side or the director side. Like, where's your background? Where does that lean toward?
To be honest, my background is in producing. You know, like when I first started in this industry, I started as a producer, but I always wanted to write. Like when I wanted to write the Great American Novel, I was like, you know what? I love telling stories. I love reading stories, but I was never disciplined. Discipline has always been something that I've just lacked in my life.
And I feel you.
Listen, I would write like maybe 100 pages and I'd be like, oh, these characters. And then I would be on to the next set of characters in the next story. So my great American novel never came together. And then one day I was watching Girlfriends. You guys remember the Mara Brock-Akil show with Tracy Ross? Okay, cool. I'm watching Girlfriends and it just dawned on me, somebody is writing this. And I was like, wait a minute, I can write this. And then I started writing scripts. And it was right in line with my stamina as a writer because a script is like 120 pages. That is literally, you know, and it's not even a whole page. It's just like that little sliver down the center of the page mostly. So I said, hey, you know what? At that time, I was making television commercials because I was working in advertising, but I was working on the account management side. And I was managing the client and managing the teams within the advertising agency. And I said, screw it. I'm going to move to LA. I'm going to become a screenwriter. And that's that. And so, but when I got to LA, I didn't know anybody. I didn't know anybody who made movies. I didn't know anything about movies. I said, I got to get on a movie set and really understand how these movies are made. So I answered an ad as a production assistant. And do you guys know what a production assistant does on a set?
Vaguely.
Okay. Okay. So the production assistant is a person that you say, sit by that door and don't let anybody come through that door. Or the production assistant is a person that you say, hey, listen, don't let this coffee pot get unempty. Like, keep this coffee going. Or, you know, just various jobs. You run around set doing everything. But a production assistant is really critical to the production because they do all of those small things that really add up to big things. So I answered this ad for a production assistant. And because I said, if I'm going to make movies, I got to get on a movie set. I got to learn how it's made so I can write a movie that somebody will want to make. So I answered this ad for a PA. The producers called me back. They said, come to our production office tomorrow. They gave me the address. I looked it up. And mind you, like I said, I'm new to LA, right? So I put the address in and it was right off of Crenshaw. So I know y'all remember Boys in the Hood.
Definitely. Definitely, yes.
So I'm like, oh my God, this is Crenshaw. I'm about to go over here and get gang banged. I mean, like, I'm about to jack my car. Like, I was scared. I was so scared riding over to this meeting the next day. Like, I was gripping the steering wheel. My knuckles were turning white as I was driving. I was so scared. But then I started looking around and I was like, wait a minute, these homes are really big. And like everybody's yard is manicured. And I started seeing old people like walking their dogs and people carrying groceries and families. And, you know, and I was like, wait a minute, this is nothing like what I was imagining. So to make a long story short, because this is a long story, to make a long story short, those people that were making that film were so screwed up. I started producing that film for them because essentially, you know, it's what I had been doing in advertising. And it's just about taking a project. You got a set amount of money for it and you got a set amount of time to do this project in. And it's just figuring out how do we make all of these pieces work together to get this to the end goal. And so that's really what started my, I went out to LA to become a screenwriter, but I started producing and I started making my bread and butter as a producer and really learning about filmmaking and learning about creating content as a producer. So to take this back to Keloid, really, my background is in producing, but I've always liked to write. I've always been a strong writer. And so it just, because of the fact that, you know, Keloid was a labor of love, it helped the fact that I was a strong producer, it helped us to create something really, really special going from with some scripts that were really great. And then matching that with my background as a producer, I knew tons of people. I knew how to like make a dollar stretch, you know, pass a dollar. And it just came together.
And that kind of rose into my next question because like Keloid has pretty great visual effects for, you know, an indie series and you have great actors. How did you take that script from a page and manifest it into what we got to see?
Yeah.
Like, how did you make that happen on a limited budget?
Well, that's what I'm talking about being a producer. That's what a producer does. A producer, you literally are producing something from nothing, you know, and especially an indie producer. Like, you gotta figure out, okay, I only have a couple of dollars. How am I gonna make these couple of dollars look like, you know, way more than they are? And the biggest strength that a producer has is his or her network. And so number one, I had been in New York for some time. We had this, we have our collective. And also I knew tons of actors and actresses that are really, really great. Like, we have really amazing talent in, you know, all over, as a matter of fact, but in New York that just has not even been discovered. You keep seeing the same people and stuff, and it's only because, you know, networks and studios, they're loathsome to take a risk on somebody new. But there's tons, that doesn't mean that there's not tons of great people out there. So Alba Woodruff is somebody that I had worked with in a directing lab. I took a year-long directing lab where I got a chance to work with different actors, got a chance to improve my craft as a director. And Alba was an actress that I worked with constantly in that lab. And I just really, when I was writing Keloid, like the mom in Keloid is like my mother. You know, like, I thought about my mother and I channeled my mother, and Abba just fit so well. And when I was writing Keloid, I had Abba's voice in my head. So boom, we got Marielle on lock because I knew Abba was amazing and she could do it. So the next thing was like, okay, how do we find the kid? How do we find Keloid? And we just auditioned tons of kids. And at that stage, you know, a lot of the kids, their only experience is plays, and acting it for a play is much different for acting for film or acting for television. Because when you're acting for a play, you know, you're acting for that last person all the way back there in that last row, you know. But and when you have a camera right in your face, you don't have to do that. You're going to come off as like, as though you're overacting if you try to act for that last person in that role, you know? And so we went through a lot of kids because they came in and they were like doing some crazy stuff in the audition, looking off into space, you know, it's like, hello, we down here. What are you doing? But when David walked in, he just blew everybody away. And I was like, all right. And this was David's first role. He did a great job. He did a really phenomenal job. He took direction really well. He, you know, listened. He was so responsible, because that was another thing that we were worried about at that age. If we tell you, you got to be someplace, you got to be there. You know, you're going to throw off the whole production if we got to wait on you 3 hours because you overslept. You know, so responsibility was also a factor. Like, is this kid really going to be responsible? And then in terms of the special effects and such, I just got on the phone and I just started dialing. You know, I just started dialing. I started calling visual effects supervisors in New York and pitching them on a project and telling them why it was important and what we were doing as a collective. And, you know, we found Bashir Hamid, and then I met with Bashir. He's our visual effects supervisor, and he read the scripts, and he was like, yo, this is dope. I'm so down, and we're going to make this work. And that was season one.
Yeah, like that, I can definitely say, like, Marielle's character is just like my mom. Like, the scene when she comes in the house and his friends are sitting there, and uh-huh. She's like, yeah, they need to get out. I'm like, okay, yeah, this is my mama right here.
Got all these folks in my damn house.
So, like, one of my questions, like, in watching this was, this would look great as, like, an American-style anime cartoon. So have you ever thought about, like, a different medium with something like this?
You know, that's a great question, and I'm really open. I'm really open to different mediums, for sure. You know, the biggest thing, because, and it's, you know, the producer's mind and me, I know that we need a production budget, you know, for whatever we do. Even like right now, we're raising money for season two. We're doing a crowdfunding campaign, and I gotta tell you, crowdfunding is like the most humbling experience in life, you know, because you're literally like begging somebody for $25, you know, so it's like very humbling. But to take it anywhere, we need a budget. We need a budget to do season two. If we were going to take it into another medium, we would need a budget to do that. If we're taking it to TV, you know, we need a network to step up and say, hey, we believe in this project, let's do it. And so I think the sky really is the limit for this project. And I feel like it's going to evolve past a web series. That's always been my hope for it. And that's the direction that I see it going in.
Yeah,
go ahead, AJ.
I was going to say, watching this, like, I could just picture like a Boondocks-esque kind of vibe, like visually with this. And I was like, okay, this will look really dope. Like, I could picture, you know, because, you know, obviously he's not like Huey or Riley, but I could picture a little kid drawn like that. you know, doing all this stuff with those kind of powers, with the kind of smart mouth that they had. And I'm like, okay, this would look great as something like that.
I think so. I think, you know, we could go in a lot of different directions with it. And that's the thing that's so exciting about it. Even in terms of the story, you know, where we left the story is so open in terms of, okay, what is Keloid going to do? Where is he going to become a petty thief? You know, is he going to use his powers for good? Is he going to use his powers for evil? Is he going to become the hero of his community? You know, how is he going to survive without Marielle? Like, the story is totally open in terms of the road and the direction that we're taking it in. And I'm not going to tell you guys where it's going because we already started, you know, formulating those scripts. So I have an idea where it's going. But you guys got to wait and see.
The cliffhanger kind of made me mad, but I'll forgive you. I was going to say, like, I watched like Slight recently, and there are like a lot of similarities between, you know, Slight and Keloid. You know, it's almost like an origin film for a black superhero. You said you wanted to make like a sci-fi fantasy story. Like, what's your favorite, like, what was your influence from the sci-fi genre, I guess?
You know, to be honest, I wasn't a big sci-fi person. Even Slight, I had never heard of Slight, unfortunately, until our publicist was like, hey, this is like Slight meets da-da-da-da-da. And then I had to go and research Slight, and I was like, how did I miss this? You know, and so I feel like that was just a function of Slight's, you know, the poor marketing of that film, unfortunately. I think it could have done much better because it was a really great film.
It was awesome. I loved it.
Yeah, I think so too. And I think they could have marketed that film a lot better. I don't know. I think that just in general, I really loved Airbender. Like, Airbender is like amazing. And when I was writing the series and I was kind of developing it within the collective, somebody was like, you should check out Airbender. And then I just started like watching, like binging on Airbender. But also just in terms of sci-fi, I always loved like Star Trek. Like, I grew up, you know, watching Star Trek, watching Next Generation. So I always loved that. But really, I just love relationships. And honestly, even though the characters, they can do, they have these abilities of teleportation and telekinesis and, you know, telepathy, like that really is just like the cherry on top of the cake, you know, or the icing, or, you know, whatever that saying is. But the thing about it that really makes the story special to me is the relationship that the kid has with his mom. And in the final scene, like, my, every time I've seen this, you know, I've watched this so many times. I know the words by heart. I probably could dream the words. I probably say them in my sleep. But every time I watch that ending scene where they're on a train, my heart breaks.
Oh, my heart dropped when I saw that. Like, I was like, how could you leave me like that? I need more.
Listen, my heart breaks for him and my heart breaks for Marielle because she did the best that she could by him. You know, when she encounter him, she really saved his life, and she did the best that she knew how to do for him. And you know, you can't tell kids that. Kids don't understand the sacrifices that their parents make when they're kids. They only understand it when they become adults and they look back and they're like, oh, okay. Like, my mom, she was so overprotective of us. And when I was a kid, I couldn't stand it. I couldn't wait to get out of the house and go off to college. I'm like, I can't wait to get out of here. And it was only that when I became an adult that I looked back and I was grateful that my mother was the way that she was because of the fact that she protected us from all kind of stuff. But Keloid, you can't tell him that right now because he's a kid and he's in it. You know what I mean? And so I feel bad for him because all his whole life, you know, what he thought to be the truth was not the truth. And I feel bad for her because her worst fears have been realized now in that moment, you know? So it's like, so that's what I'm saying about the abilities being the cherry on top. You know, it's really the heart of the story is the relationships between, you know, the mom and him, and even a relationship between Blake and Marielle, because Blake, a lot of people say Blake is not a villain. Blake swears up and down he's not a villain. He said he was hurt, and, you know, and his hurt drove him to that moment, you know? So that's the way I look at it.
Yeah, Blake is a great villain to me because a villain is only as good as, you know, his motivations. And Blake has, you know, Blake is motivated. You know, he has a reason to be the villain. So, yeah, he's a great character.
Yeah, and we lucked out when we found that character is played by Frederick Jean. And man, that guy, he's so talented. He's so amazing. And this is what I'm talking about the quote unquote undiscovered talent. You know, it's so many just amazing actors out here, and not just actors in front of the camera and behind the camera. There's so many amazing people. And that's our motivation with the collective, is to create opportunities for all of these really, really talented people to step to take their careers to the next level. And I really hope that not just Keloid, but some of the other productions that we're putting together as well serves in this way for those talented individuals.
Yeah, that was actually that kind of rolls into a question I had, you know, speaking of, you know, talented and unknown individuals. And I know, like, you know, you mentioned like budget concerns, but I think one thing that might be a great supplement to the series is, have you guys thought about like doing a soundtrack for the next season using indie artists?
Oh, yeah. Listen, I think that's a great idea. I mean, I think that's a great idea. I fell in love with some of the musicians that, because we didn't have a whole lot of music in Keloid, and that's just really because I'm not a music person, really. But we already have people that have contacted us and musicians that have contacted us that are like, listen, I got to have my music in season two. And so I think we're going to have a really, really dope, a dope series of artists in season two, because folks are already bringing their music to us.
Yeah, because I'm a musician, or a former musician back in my day. And I was like, one of the first things I thought of, I was like, man, this would be great. Like, if you had like just some indie artists kind of adding just a little, you know, not necessarily a song that kind of, you know, that's telling the story, but something that kind of matches the vibe for each episode.
Yeah.
And have that as a soundtrack. I think that would be like a great narration piece to get people kind of zoned in with.
I think so too. And I would love to hear some of your music just to vibe to it, you know?
If I ever get back to making some.
Which you made before, right?
Yeah, oh, yeah. I'm writing my AJ diss song right now. So,
yeah. I've been back writing. So I actually do have some stuff. But this isn't to plug me, so. But I will gladly send you some when some is finished.
Okay, gotcha. You know you got your SoundCloud. Go ahead.
No, so actually my music isn't on SoundCloud anymore. I had to take it off when we were putting podcast episodes up because they had a time limit and we're broke. So
yeah, you got to call a Chance the Rapper up.
So yeah, actually there's actually no music on my SoundCloud now, but. No, actually, I do have a song on my Bandcamp called Blurred that would actually probably be perfect for this.
Oh, shit.
I don't even know why I didn't just think of that. I forgot all about that. Yeah, it's called Blurred. It's like what it was like growing up being a Blurred, so before it was cool.
There you go.
I can shoot that to you. I'll put the link to the song in the chat.
You know, we were so blessed by the musicians. Like our theme song, that theme track, I love that theme track. And it's just like every time I hear it, I get hyped. And so I'm excited about the music, because you can't have a show without music. You can't have a film without music. You just can't. You know, even that last scene where the climax scene in the warehouse with Blake and Marielle and Keloid, when we first had the lock cut, it didn't have any music in it. And I just, for like maybe a couple of weeks, I was like, something is missing. And then when we put that suspense track under there, it just really took it to a whole new level. So you just gotta have music. And to your point, I really agree. I think that it would be great to have a whole soundtrack. I think that would be dope.
Yeah, see, I'm out. See, I thought I had some good ideas. Ronnie's always trying to tell me I don't, but
it's only so you won't get complacent. That's why I'm trying to motivate you.
I appreciate it. this part of our band. So one of the things that I noticed is like there seems like that there's a really big, a broad mythology that's kind of hinted at. That isn't really uncovered. Is there a plan to kind of go deeper in that in season two? Or if you can't give that away, I understand. But
no, yes, there is. Yes, there is. You're going to really kind of understand. You know, a lot of people kind of contacted us and said they saw different types or different themes within the show. In terms as mythology goes, like some folks were like, oh, this is, you know, I see a lot of the Yoruba culture in this. You know, a lot of people were like, okay, this is a lot about and just a lot of different things. And we're definitely going to dig into that a little bit. Not a little bit, but a lot of bit of season two. You're going to understand just exactly the origin of, you know, this line of human beings and where they came from and to where they are now. Their whole, like, almost as if there's a secret society, who they are and how they operate and how they move through the world and all kind of good stuff. And also, a lot of folks, even though Marielle is hibernating, some other folks are going to come out of hibernation.
Oh, so,
okay.
Yeah.
So you're going to see. I was wondering that. Yeah.
Yeah, somebody really important is going to come out of hibernation along with it. Because, you know, there's always new threats. And then also, Keloy, he has to reconcile in some kind of way. He did take a life. You know, and you got this woman who, Evelyn, who is, hey, you know, she is not going to stop until she gets some answers about her daughter. And you can't just kill somebody and keep it pushing. You know, you got to have some type of, he has to come to some type of reconciliation as a result of that. So we'll see. In season two, we got a lot of stuff to uncover. And we got a lot of stuff to kind of tie up in terms of some of the ends that we left dangling in season one, which I'm really excited. You know, when I didn't really expect the Blurred community to really embrace it the way that it did, like right away. I mean, and that really is what drove the popularity for the show. It was you guys. You know, as soon as we released it, you guys started writing about it. Y'all started tweeting about it. And I just can't say thank you enough because it exceeded our expectation in terms of the embrace that the community gave it. So thanks, guys. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, that's what drew me in because AJ sent me the link to the trailer and then we watched the first episode and I just loved it because, you know, I'm really big into sci-fi and fantasy, but at the same time, like, why can't there be stories, you know, with characters who look like me? And that's why I gravitated towards this so much, because I see a lot of my 16-year-old self in Keloid and like I recognize that character and I recognize his mother. And so, yeah, I love it. And although there's an overarching, like, you know, fantasy theme, like it's really about those relationships, you know, between, you know, mother and son, you know, it's really about that. So that's why I love it so much.
So do you guys have some stories in mind? I know y'all do.
Oh yeah, I got a ton.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. You don't want to get me started. I have lots of stories.
Yeah, me and Ronnie, man, that's one of the reasons we kind of clicked is because we're both kind of like out there thinkers as far as stuff like this. But seeing something like this is cool because it's like, you know, I'm like, wow, you know, I could do something with all these characters and ideas I've got bouncing around in my head. Like,
of course,
you know, it seems a lot more possible, you know, than it did, you know, a few years ago when I was younger thinking about this stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Of course you can. And you guys have already built a platform for it. So, and built an audience. And so it would be a lot easier for you all. It's just about like figuring it out. So who's the writer between you guys, or do you both write?
Ronnie's a better writer than I am. I'm an idea guy.
Okay.
I'm a decent writer. I'm a decent writer.
Oh, whatever, man. Stop it. Ronnie's a good, Ronnie's a good writer. I'm always the guy with the big old ideas, and our buddy Ryan, he kind of helps ground them. So between the three of us, we kind of have a good mix.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, if we were one person, yeah, we'd be pretty awesome if we could combine forces.
No, you don't want to be one person because then you're limiting yourself. One person can only be in one spot at one time. You know what I mean? Three people.
That's true.
Listen, you don't want to limit yourself to one
Touché.
Person. You know what I'm saying? I think it's great. You can't do this without a team. And that's one of the things that the reasons why we were able to get Keloid off the ground in the first place is because we had such a large team. And the fact that we had so many people within the collective that gravitated towards it. And filmmaking, I mean, honestly, this type of work is, the reason that more people don't do it is because they're isolated, because they don't have a team, they don't have a community, they don't have a support system. And it just seems like too large of an undertaking to really do. And it's also why a lot of times projects get stalled in post-production, because when you're shooting something, there's a whole team rallying around it. And then after it's in the can, then everybody goes their separate ways and the producer's left with this massive, you know, amount of footage, and it's like, okay, I got to find an editor, I got to do this, I got to do that, and it becomes overwhelming again for one person. So because of the fact that you guys got three folks, I think that that's amazing. So you just got to start putting some pen to paper. So now, are you guys thinking about something animated? Are you thinking about something live action? What you doing?
See, I don't know, because we've never really kind of talked about it. We've always, like, we have a couple of ideas for, like, you know, other content, but it more is like this, you know, just kind of stuff where we're, you know, sitting around talking. So we haven't really talked about.
Yeah, and we briefly mentioned, like, going off into, like, video content. Like, I have another friend, he's associated with the blog. Like, we actually had a few ideas for a few shorts, but where we feel a short is finding someone to, you know, shoot it and edit the video. But yeah, we just want to do little things like that, like a few shorts and video content, things like that.
Now, Ronnie does write screenplays. Like, don't let him sell you shit.
Ronnie is being modest here.
No, he really is. Like, Ronnie
yeah, because I'm Ronnie not
writes screen, Ronnie I'm writes
not,
screenplays.
I'm not here to toot my own horn. I'm okay. I'm learning as I go along.
Hey man, if I done posted a music track, like you got to toot your own horn.
Yeah, listen, toot your horn, brother. Okay, you're an amazing screenwriter. It's okay, say it, claim it. Even if you're not, claim it anyway, because you are working into that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, positive affirmations.
Absolutely. But I think for you guys, now the time is ripe. You know what I mean? You guys are, you built a platform already. You already got an audience. So you already got a built-in machine to distribute it already. So you already got half the battle worked out. You know, it's a lot of folks who are creating something and they're starting from scratch as far as an audience goes. So just to get that ball rolling, it's heavy. That ball is heavy in terms of when you're creating anything. And then, okay, let's say you get it, you get something great on the page. Then you got to get a team together. Like you said, Ryan, where do I get somebody to shoot it and somebody to do this and the actors and the da da da. So then you get all of that done and you get it edited. And then it's like, shit, how do I distribute this? You know what I mean? So, and you guys already have that other half figured out. You already have an audience and a distribution mechanism that you already have. So you got to have the battle figured out already. So don't wait. Just do it. Content is king. Just do it. Just get it on the page. The first step is getting it on the page. And I'll say that to you guys and I'll say it to anybody who's listening. You know, there's a lot of folks who came who have been writing and have been emailing and hitting us up on IG, and they're like, you know, I have this idea, I have this story, and I say the same thing to them. Get it on the page. And when you get it on the page, you're going to have to refine it, because probably the first time you get something on the page, it's not going to be great. It's going to be okay. And you don't want to start out okay. You want to start out with something amazing. And that's one of the reasons why we were able to attract so many awesome collaborators like our visual effects supervisor, because we had something really, really great on the page and they saw the potential in it right away. But if you start out with something that's okay on the page, people are like, I don't know, I don't have time for this right now, et cetera, et cetera. But start out with something really, really great. Take your time, write it, think it through. And then you're going to be saving yourself a lot of time, because people are going to gravitate towards it. So that's not just advice for you guys. That's advice for everybody that may have an idea, or that maybe they want to shoot something. Just take it step by step by step, and just put one foot in front of the other. And you can't go wrong with that type of an approach. And there are people out there who want to help. There are people out there who want to be a part of a film community, who want to be a part of a community of makers. You know, we started, when the Black TV and Film Collective started, we actually started on Meetup. And we weren't doing any kind of promotion. We weren't doing any kind of recruiting, any kind of marketing. And every single day, it was 7 and 8 people who were joining our Meetup group, because of the fact that they were looking for the type of community that we have. You know, they were looking for a community of people of color who would come together and work on projects together, who would share knowledge, and they wanted to build their relationships. And we said to ourselves, we were like, wait a minute, what we're doing, this is actually a service to the society. This should be a nonprofit organization. And that's how we got started. And that was our start. So you guys can even, AJ, you're down in Atlanta, man. There's tons of people down in Atlanta who are awesome, collaborators. And I'm sure Ronnie in Alabama, there's tons of folks too.
Oh yeah.
You know, and you, unknowingly just answered one of our last questions, because I was going to ask for an aspiring filmmaker or writer, anybody who may be listening, how, like, what's your advice to, like, get the ball rolling on that? But you just answered all of that, so thanks.
Well, just in recapping, it's two things. You got to get around people who are going to motivate you and who are going to encourage you. And you got to do the same thing for those people as well. And build that type of community. No matter where you are, there's other people like you who want to create really great stuff. And who just want to, who want to take their cell phone or their, you know, DSLR camera or whatever. Order, you can order lights off of Amazon for $100, you know. And so the most important thing is building a community. And it doesn't have to be a 1,200 people like the Black Stephen Film Collective. It could be 3 people, 4 people, 5 people. Just build your tribe. And then you guys push each other. Push each other. You know, have set times where you say, okay, I'm going to show up with 5 pages that I've written. And keep that date. Set that date. We're going to get together on September 18th. Everybody's going to have 5 pages and push each other to meet that deadline, you know, and keep workshopping what's on the page. And before you know it, when you set the small milestones like that, when you look up, you're going to be across the big finish line. But it starts with building a community and setting those small milestones.
That's great advice.
Very good advice.
Thank you. I try.
That is. I hope Ronnie.
Well, AJ, you have anything else?
No, I don't have anything else. It was very, very informative. I love when people who do dope stuff like this come on and give us gems. So,
Before we go, I have like a few like rapid fire questions. You already answered one, and you said that, because usually I ask sci-fi people if they're like a Trekkie or they lean Star Wars. You're a Trekkie. So, what's your favorite movie?
Oh, I have so many favorite movies, man. That is, you know, I have those sappy ones like The Notebook that I really, really love. I love The Usual Suspects. I love Lord of the Rings, like all the whole trilogy. I love the Lord of the Rings trilogy, but I love those books growing up. I would read those books. I could pick those books up anywhere in a book and just read it, no matter how many times I had read the book before. The Matrix, of course, I love The Matrix. Yes. I went to see The Matrix in the theater no less than 5 times.
I was way too young to see The Matrix, but yeah, I definitely saw it like 3 times. Also, like favorite TV show? This could be a like of all time or currently.
I'll tell you the one that I just binge watched the past 2 days. It's this show on Netflix called Touch, and it actually came out in 2002 with Kiefer Sutherland. And it was about this kid who had these connective abilities. He used numbers to write what was wrong in the world. He was a mute and he would communicate through numbers. And his dad, who was, you know, the guy from 24, Peter Sutherland, he had to figure out the clues that his kid was kind of giving him by these numbers. And so I just binge watched that show, but it's not my favorite show in the world. But I think one of my favorite shows of all times has to be Cosby Show, Different World, Girlfriends, not necessarily in that order, but definitely those are like right up there in the top three or four.
Word. Well, that's all I got. AJ, you got anything?
I do not.
Well, guys, right, I want to say one last thing, and that is that we are in like the final 2 weeks of our Keloid Season 2 crowdfunding campaign. I don't know. When is this going live? Or it's live right now, right?
Yeah, it'll be live on the
it's
YouTube.
It's live right now, but we post it to iTunes. We'll probably post it Thursday is when everybody else will hear it.
Okay, cool, because Thursday is a payday. That's good.
Right.
So we are in the last 2 weeks of our crowdfunding campaign. We are close to we're raising $10,000 for season 2. We're at like almost. We're knocking on 8,000 right now, so we're in a really good place to close out the campaign, hitting our target. But we just really need everybody that loved Keloid in season 1, just $15, $25, $50, whatever you got. We would love to just see your name in the contributors role, because it takes money to create this kind of content. And so, if you love it and you want to see it continue, donate to the crowdfunding campaign. And thank you very, very much.
Yeah, I get paid for it, so I'll definitely
donate. All right, that's what's up. I'm gonna hit you up, AJ, and remind you.
Hey, hey, look, listen, listen. You listen to my song, I'll do it.
Listen to my song anyway, because I want to hear it.
But yeah, I'm actually posting a link as we speak. So if you're listening right now or listening Thursday, you'll see the link on our timeline and just click on it. And if you love the show,
www.keloid.tv, KELOID.TV. So www.keloid.TV, and you can contribute to the campaign directly through that link.
And please do it, because we need more shows like this.
Yes, we do.
Amen. Yes.
Well, all right. Again, thank you for joining us. This was great. You dropped a lot of knowledge, a lot of wisdom. I'm certainly excited for season two. I'm actually about to go run back through season one now, just to kind of see if I missed anything. But we will catch you guys next time. Again, that's keloid.tv. If you have not watched this yet, go watch it. Ronnie has Ronnie has a review up for every episode. We got to support more shows like this, and we definitely have to support more people like this so they start putting this out and you all can stop complaining that there's never any black characters on TV or in videos.
Thank you so much, guys. Really appreciate it.
All right.
Thank you.
Peace.
Bye.
Bye.
you has the
Don't call it a podcast. I've been here for years.
The kids wear crowns.com.